Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Modiwa Gabaza, and for today, we're getting into what's going on in the world of investments, but more importantly, how all of this is informed by the macroeconomic picture that we find ourselves in. Right now, we are recording this on the 23rd of July, 2024, which means we are a couple of months out since the election in South Africa, and it means we're also a couple of months before we get into the US election. Lots of dramas. This week we saw Joe Biden stepping down as the Democratic possible nominee for that potential re-election as president of the US. Around the world, we started off the year saying that there were going to be over 70 elections going on around the year, so a lot has been informing the markets, not to negate, of course, the high interest rates and high inflation environment that we find ourselves in. Now, for today specifically, we're going to be talking to South Africa's longest running hedge fund manager, that is Peregrine Capital, and we're just going to get a sense of what are they seeing in the market and some of the things that they are keeping an eye on. Jacques Conradi, CEO of Peregrine Capital, joins us and will help to unpack what they're seeing in the market. Jacques, greetings to you.
Hi, Mudiwa, and thank you very much for having me on.
Jacques, we last spoke to you in February 2023. So, I'm just going to call it roughly a year and a half ago. And, at the time, you guys were celebrating 25 years and you were giving us, a picture of how, your various funds had performed the year prior, which was 2022. And it was a good time. When we spoke to you guys, you were talking about, investing in Tungela, local versus international investments. It was a slightly different world to what we're seeing now. I think where I'll just start today's conversation to locate where we are is Government of National Unity. How is this, or how has this factored into whatever models you and your team, possibly have, when making investment decisions, or at least allocating capital?
Thanks, Rudy. So let me maybe just take you back to the run-up to the election, because I think it's quite informative how we're thinking about things now and how we thought about it before the election. So if you look at 2023 and the start of 2024, it was a tough period for South Africa. We had this very extreme load shedding. That was something that was occupying a lot of our mind as a team, and we really did a lot of work to try to assess, is this load shedding going to continue perpetually, or is Eskom going to fix it? I think very fortunately, we did, in the work we did, we thought it was quite likely they could substantially improve the performance of the coal-fired fleet. And on the other hand, that everyone was doing solar. And fortunately, that situation has played out. And I think that Eskom's done an even better job than we thought they could. And we're like 120 days almost free of load shedding. So, but that was really impacting SA valuations in 2023 and 24. So in the run-up to the election, a lot of SA shares were very cheap. We had this load shedding situation. People weren't clear whether that was gone or going to come back. And then you had real uncertainty going into the election. So as a fund manager, and specifically as a hedge fund manager, our job, I think, is maybe slightly different from some other fund managers. Maybe you have some fund managers that are willing to take big bets and just swing for the fences and try to make great returns, but they'll have big drawdowns at some stage when the market pulls back. As a hedge fund, our goal is to deliver consistent outperformance, but a key part of this is protecting clients on the downside. So you can't just go all out on one bet, because typically, like, the future is uncertain. You don't know how things are going to play out. So like in the run-up to the election, there was many different scenarios that could play out. Yeah, as you know, and all of us were discussing at the time, I think most people thought the ANC maybe gets like 45% of the vote, and then maybe they can do a few small parties and they do a coalition and things stay largely the same. And then there was this more uncertain outcome where if they get around 40 to 42%, which actually ended up happening, who do they choose for their partner? Is it, and the peak was really at that stage, was it going to be EFF or DA? And I think those two paths were very different for the economy and markets. We know the philosophy of the EFF. It probably leans more towards kind of a different from the current constitution, more towards maybe perhaps a communist type structure. And we've seen that in all countries around the world. It doesn't work. It doesn't lead to wealth for the country. It leads to poverty for people at the end of the day. So that would be very negative for SA and the economy on the one hand, where kind of a DA and other more moderate parties that's pro the constitution could actually lead to potentially quite a prosperous period for the country. So as a fund manager, you've got these, like maybe the base case and these two extremes to work with. So you can't just bet on one because each of them has some chance of happening. After an event that's happened, we now know what happened. But I guess beforehand, you got to prepare the fund for all three. So I think that's what took up a lot of our time in the first 4 or 5 months of the year, to say, how do we best position the portfolio to take advantage of the cheap valuations in SA if things go moderately or well, but without, while ensuring we lose as little as possible or not much at all if things go pear-shaped or if the bad scenario plays out. So what we did is we kind of took quite a lot of exposure in the very cheap SA sectors. So things like the banks were very cheap. A lot of the clothing retailers, the food retailers, there was a lot of very, very attractive valuations out there. So that was the way to play it. But then the question was, how do you protect the fund if the bad scenario plays out? And I think the cheapest way we found to hedge was to say, let's do option structures on the rand dollar exchange rate, because typically that's the outlet valve. If things go poorly for an economy, the currency blows out. So we actually were willing to spend quite a material part of the funds, I think probably like more than 100 million rand then, we spent on buying various option structures to say, if things go poorly, these options are going to protect our portfolio. If things go well, we're going to lose that money. We're going to lose the protection, but we're going to do substantially better on all the positions we put in place. So I just want to give you that framing. That's kind of roughly how we went into this, to say capture as much upside as we can, but while kind of minimizing the capital we have at risk if things don't go well. And then fortunately, I think for South Africa, and we're very happy with this outcome, we probably got by far the best case scenario. That wasn't anyone's kind of agenda year. A government of national unity, including the DA, the IFP, the PA, many other parties, bringing the parties together, and real credit to Cyril and the ASC and the ANC for getting this done. I think they really handled their loss in votes with great maturity and with great wisdom, and did the best thing for the country. So we are personally very, very happy about that. I think we'll have to see exactly how it obviously plays out, how long it takes for the economy to improve, what kind of improvements are made. But where we're sitting right now, we are very happy with how it played out for our funds, but much more importantly, how it played out for the country.
It is a very interesting place, you know, for the South African economy to find itself right now. Like you said, the different scenarios that you just outlined now, what ended up happening was probably the least likely thing that people expected to happen going into the elections. Obviously, there was an expectation that some type of a coalition was going to be formed, but I don't think people would have anticipated that this is the type of coalition that we were going to go for. It was part of the realm of possibility, like you said, and you guys even modeled it out as a scenario, but the likelihood, you know, didn't seem, you know, all that high before going into the election. So now that we have a little bit of certainty based on that, right? How do you see things playing out over time? And the question I'm asking is, earlier on when we began the session, I did mention all of the different various elections going on around the world. The one that, you know, global markets are now looking at is obviously the US election. And South Africa has tended to be a market that, you know, takes a lot of hits based on what's going on in the global, you know, in the global realm and the global market, right? So now that there's a government of national unity in place, as Peregrine, what's weighing more on your investment decisions? Is it the, I guess, execution on a GNU front, or is it now the global factors that sort of come back, you know, to steer local markets?
I think you always have to look at both local and offshore, as we have a substantial portion of our portfolio in SA, but we do also have kind of various offshore holdings. So in SA, the key things that we think has changed pretty quickly is two important things. Firstly, if you look at the cost of funding for the government, the interest rates they pay on government bonds, because of this favorable election outcome, if you look at the long-term government bonds, they've already compressed from 12% to 11%, that funding cost. Now, that's a material positive because it means whenever you issue new debt for the government, we are in a substantial deficit, you pay a percent less. I think if they can deliver on some of these GNU improvements, we think that would come back to 10.5-10%. So there's probably a scope to take another 1% off. And a big driver has actually been also foreign inflows. I think with a certainty in this outcome, we've seen foreigners buy about 30 billion rand of SA government bonds in the last 2 months and 60 billion for the year to date. So that's quite a nice positive that kind of has a pretty quick impact on to improve the SA outlook, because it basically means eventually your interest bill reduces and you can spend more locally in your economy rather than paying interest on debt. And then this Eskom situation that I spoke about, that's actually very material. I mean, I think last year government had to pay 50 or 60 billion rand into Eskom to bail them out. They were making losses. They had to burn all this diesel. Right now, because there's no load shedding, there's two material positives. Firstly, Eskom selling a lot more electricity, right? Last year, there was demand, but we were at stage 3 or 4 load shedding, which means you sell 15% less than what there's demand for. So you don't get the revenue in. And also you've got to burn all this diesel that costs like 5 times more than your coal power fleet to generate. So, on Eskom alone, we think there could be like a 50 billion rand swing in Eskom's profit. And that's really good for the country because it means the government doesn't have to put that money in Eskom becomes self-sustaining. So there's potentially real flexibility that opens up for the government again. I think in the short term, we probably hope they use that to reduce the deficit and reduce the government debt. But in time, that could be spent on the economy, on infrastructure and other things to improve things. So that's just a small part of the picture on why we think things could get better in SA and why we're still optimistic on various SA shares. And then the global situation, yeah, I would agree with you that there's some real uncertainty. I mean, there's some craziness in US politics these last few weeks with the Trump attempted assassination, with Biden dropping out. It really is. It kind of actually makes SA look pretty stable right now versus, I think, what's going on in the US. I mean, at least we've got a competent President Ramaphosa that's in charge of all his faculties, where there's obviously real doubts if Biden can't run for re-election, should he be running the US for the next 6 months. So there's real uncertainty there. And I think that the policies of a Trump versus Kamala Harris would be quite different. So I think it's potentially quite two uncertain and different outcomes for markets, depending on who wins the election in November and gets grand president in January. So I think we're keeping a close eye on that. I think currently the betting markets is putting about a 65% chance on a Trump Republican victory. So we follow that as kind of an estimate of the odds right now. So it's kind of 65 Republicans, 35 Democrats. But I mean, that could change. So we're going to watch that closely over the next few months and try to position the portfolio accordingly.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how, you know, all of that plays out. The Trump victory, you know, at this point, especially after that assassination attempt, there is a lot of, you know, confidence in that particular ticket, you know, to say that, you know, that will likely be the outcome. But, you know, let's see if Democrats in the United States will be able to pull something out of the hat, you know, with, you know, Kamala Harris, you know, or if there are any surprise candidates. But at least for now, you know, it's the Harris ticket that we are expecting to be the one to represent the Democratic vote. But outside of that, then, one of the things I'm quite curious to understand, Jacques, is as a hedge fund, right, your investment philosophy and also the tools that are available to you is a little bit different to, let's say, another type of fund manager, right? So in terms of positioning yourselves in the market and the tools at your disposal, right, what do you think you could possibly make use of in a period like this? I think when I was just reading up, One of the things that you guys made use of, you know, which has been characteristic of hedge funds, you know, over the years, is you made use of derivatives in the lead up to the local election. But, you know, at the moment, are there any unique tools that you guys have at your disposal, you know, just to push yourselves through this, some of the uncertainty?
Yeah, I think the one you touched on, the derivatives, it is a key benefit to running a hedge fund. So I think it's very well illustrated in the run-up to the SA election, where we basically said we aggregated all our South African exposure and say this much of the fund is in South Africa-linked shares. That's the part that will either benefit if things go well in the election, or will be negatively impacted if we get the kind of bad case scenario, or if we get violence after the election, or whatever the negative scenarios could be. So what we did is we said basically that entire part of the portfolio, you can do a derivative overlay on that. So you spend a certain premium on those options. We would always be buying options. If you sell options, you could be exposed to very large losses if things go your way. If you buy options, you know the only money you could lose on that option is the premium you spend. So we like that because it's a quantifiable loss, the premium you spend on the option, and the payoff is potentially very large, almost unlimited, if the event you're hedging for, or that you are kind of putting the option on, plays out. So in this case, we said, let's spend that, I'm just going to use around number 100 million rand on the election outcome. And if things go poorly, our local shares will sell down, but the rand will blow out. The rand might go 21 rand or 22 rand against the dollars. In that case, you'll get a several billion rand payoff on these options. So you spend 100, you could make a billion or two, which would then provide material protection to the losses you have on the other shares in the portfolio. So at the end of the day, your investors might come out even though the SA market does very poorly in that scenario. And that's exactly the type of things we like, where we can quantify how much do we spend on protection, and this is the protection we get, and this is the result on our portfolio. So right now, we don't have that much on, because typically these things work best if you do them close to the event or close to a major event. Otherwise, you're just spending premium and you're not going to get a result. So I think that tool was very, very actively used for the last few months. And I think potentially close to the US election, or if there's any other major events in the year, we might use that again. And then, I mean, maybe the one other tool is shorting. So you can basically identify businesses that are struggling or that are not performing well, and use that as a hedge against some of the shares you own that are taking market share or that are performing well. So again, that's one we probably use all the time, very consistently. And the derivatives we use around specific events where things could go either way, and where you want to manage the downside on that one specific event.
Yeah, very interesting just to hear some of the tools at your disposal, derivatives, you know, shorting, and, you know, the game of chess that you need to play to make, you know, some of those moves happen so that you can create that that return, you know, especially in an environment like the one that, you know, that we're in. Keen to get your thoughts, right? Lots of conversations about the local market, you know, delistings, that type of thing. What do you make of the local equity market? Are you bullish, you know, just around the prospect of, you know, SA companies, SA stocks, you know, or do you find that it's better to be weighted towards some of the more offshore investments right now?
So I'd say we remain somewhat bullish on the SA market, but we are at heart contrarians. We like trying to see things when they're still unpopular, when other people haven't seen something. So we were probably more bullish on the SA market 6 or 12 months ago. The outlook was more uncertain, but a lot of shares were really, really cheap at that time. So valuations were a lot lower. So you always have to look at two things. What's the outlook for the company or the economy, and what's the price you pay? And if you pay too high a price for something, it doesn't matter if the outlook's good, you might not make money or you might lose money. Where even if the outlook's muted or bad, if you pay a very low price for something, you could actually still make money. So let's say last year, uncertain outlook, very, very attractive prices. So that was kind of, and also early this year. What's happened now since the election is we have had kind of improvements in the market. Things like the banks and retailers have actually done quite well. They're probably off 20, 25, 30%. Off the low levels they got to at the worst. So some of the good news has been priced into those shares. So where does that leave us? I think what would happen on the larger companies in the market, you need one of two things to happen. You need the the foreigners that's largely left the South African equity market to come back because of the improved outlook. I mean, and interestingly, I mentioned earlier that on the bonds, we'd seen foreign buying of 60 billion this year. Where we're sitting right now, the foreigners have still sold 80 billion rand of SA equities, and they haven't actually, it's stabilized post the election, but they haven't actually turned that around. So that's an interesting thing to watch to say, are they still going to come? I'm sure they're doing work and research on SA, but it would be nice to see those flows turn around, and that could drive valuations. And the second thing is you need to see the improved economic outlook. You maybe need to see a few rate cuts. You need to see actually things getting better, and we think it's highly likely to happen. So on the larger shares, I think right now they're somewhat closer to fairly priced for the current outlook. But if the economy improves, we think they could still do reasonably. We probably see somewhat more value in the mid or small cap shares that hasn't actually moved as much post-election. Typically, the movements happen first in the larger, more liquid shares. So we think there's still some nice opportunities on the small and mid-cap space. And as you mentioned, there are delistings happening on the JSE. And it's, I think it's partly because these shares are so cheap. They're certainly trading at below what they would be worth to a private owner in many cases. So I think we like the valuations in that space somewhat more than the liquid shares right now.
When it comes to equities, are you playing at all in the private markets, or is it largely or only in the listed space?
We are, I think, almost exclusively focused on kind of the listed space. I think it's where you can buy shares and get out of. And I think that's important around things like the selection. You need the flexibility to be able to take positions. If your scenario plays out, the shares run, you need to be able to take profits and sell some of those opportunities and sit on the cash and be willing to redeploy that. So I think the vast majority of our focus is on the listed space in SA. And then I think offshore, also because there are some themes like the AI theme and other themes that you, unfortunately, given the makeup of the JSE, that you can't get exposure to yet. So if you want to take advantage of those for investors, you have to have an open mind to offshore opportunities.
I'm actually glad that you brought up the world of AI, because it does seem as if right now you can't have a conversation about equity markets or technology for that matter without those two letters, artificial intelligence.
Yes.
Without becoming too hyperbolic or speculative, is this a bubble?
It's a key question. It's a hard question to solve. So we are extremely excited about the benefits AI will bring to, I think, just humanity over the next 5, 10, 20 years. It's just staggering to me that if you talk to ChatGPT, there clearly is a form of almost human-level intelligence in this now, which we've never before had. So just in my head, the opportunities that's opened up for the world by now having computerized intelligence. I mean, my kids are small. I'm training them to use this thing. It's on voice on my phone. I get them to ask questions of the AI so they can learn that there's this new tool. There's almost this friend you have available that you can speak to when you've got a difficult problem to solve or something to understand. So that's just an amazing thing. So it's almost like the invention of the internet. Clearly, the benefits will be almost surely be massive down the line. And then the question is, what is currently priced into the companies, and is too much or too little priced in? I think the interesting thing to us internally is that normally when these big new tech changes happen, so when maybe computers got developed, when the internet got developed, when mobile phones got developed, that's often a time when new startups replace the large existing tech companies, and you get new winners and some of the existing companies are losers. But the way that AI has played out, and because of these extensive cost of training models and massive data centers and lots of NVIDIA graphics cards required, it's actually played into the hands of the large tech companies this time around. I mean, normally this is where they get displaced, but they're the ones that's best positioned to win, because firstly, they can afford all these data centers, and secondly, they can apply AI into their large existing businesses. So we think it's played out very, very well for these large companies. And we, like many shares like Facebook or Meta, Google, Microsoft, we think they're long-term winners. And the valuations, like Microsoft's at about 30 times forward earnings, Facebook, Meta, Google, they're like 22 to 23 times earnings. This looks quite reasonable for us versus the overall market. So my gut says they're not in a bubble. The one that's hard, that I'm not a complete expert on, is NVIDIA. Again, the multiple, the earnings multiple doesn't look that expensive, but they are making super profits right now because they're the only one that can deliver these chips in at the speed, at the low power cost, and at the size or at the number, the unit numbers the market requires. So that one is very uncertain because there you've got to take a view, how quickly can other people replicate their technology? There clearly is a big incentive to do so given how much money NVIDIA is making. So how long does their edge last? So that's, so maybe the specifically the semiconductor part that makes the chips, that's the part where I'm somewhat unsure of. I think on the other companies, we are not seeing a bubble right now. They're using the AI in their businesses. Their earnings are benefiting from it, and it doesn't look stretched to us. So I unfortunately can't give you a complete answer, but that's roughly my view on the two parts of this ecosystem.
All right, that particularly makes sense. And I like how you delineated between some of the different big tech stocks and, you know, NVIDIA. Lots of debate around NVIDIA. It's a very interesting scenario that they find themselves in. I guess the biggest question is just around how long does the moat that they have around their business last for?
Correct. Yeah. And that's a hard one to answer.
Yes, it certainly is. Before we land this conversation, Jacques, a couple of things on hedge funds specifically. First, performance of your own, of Peregrine. You know, maybe you could just talk to us, give us some insight. How has the first half of 2024, gone for you guys? And, you know, how are you looking for the second half?
So we were up in our high growth fund. That's our flagship fund. We were up about 8% for the first half. And let's say over the last year, we're up just below 16%. So I think I'm reasonably pleased with that. I mean, there's always, as I spoke earlier on, how do we bet all in on a good election outcome? One could have done better, but our job is to both take advantage of the upside while being hedged if things don't turn out well. So I think I'm fairly happy with how that played. Obviously, it would have been nice if we had a whole bunch of NVIDIA that could have added another percent or two performance, but we fortunately had some other AI beneficiaries. So I think with that, I'm fairly happy. And I think our cumulative return since inception is now over 150 times money. So million rand up front, worth more than 150 million rand now from the start of 2000. So it's nice to keep compounding. And that's the key for me as a hedge fund is consistent outperformance. That's actually how you generate wealth last year over the long run. It doesn't help if you do a 50% year, but then you lose 50% again the next year. That's not how you build wealth. Consistent, strong outperformance while limiting downside for me is how you put consistent runs on the scoreboard and build wealth for yourself and clients over time. And that's certainly what we aim to do. So I would say not unhappy with how the first half went.
And do you disclose your AUM?
I think you can see some of the data on some of our fact sheets. It's around 20 billion rand or so in assets. So I think it's been a good period for our funds the last few years. I think it's been nice that more people in SA realize the value that a hedge fund can add to their portfolio, both in terms of the higher expected return, but also because of how we do things and the type of opportunities we invest in, it typically has low correlation with a lot of the other SA funds they own. So it's nice to add to a mix of funds for individuals. So it's been nice that that's been almost somewhat seen by at least some individuals and IFAs in the SA market.
Yeah, because one of the things I was then curious about is as Peregrine, when it comes to the investments that you're doing and making, do you have direct exposure to retail investors, or is it largely investing on behalf of institutions?
Yeah, actually, I think we're almost majority retail and either direct retail money or through financial advisors. I think that's kind of the biggest part of things, which has been, I think, pleasing to us to see that there's, I mean, the institutional market has probably in our early days was a bigger part of our assets in the industry. And then I think over the last 5 or so years, we have seen that interest from the retail side, which has been quite pleasing to see. And I think it's nice that we can hopefully add value to more individuals over and above the pension funds and endowments and other things where we manage money for.
And do people know? Yeah, because I think for me, that was the in all of this, where I wanted to get to was my curiosity around, I guess, the education or the understanding level of the retail investor as to what a hedge fund is and what a hedge fund does, Right. Do you find that this is an informed an informed investor, or are they just looking for, you know, a way to diversify, and they hear that there's this hedge fund thing? Let's see if we can get some returns out of it.
So I think for the first, I mean, we've been around for 26 years. For our first 20 years, we were actually quite below the radar, kept our heads down, just was focusing on generating great returns for clients. And I think there was a point where we realized that we could be kind of adding value to the lives of more people and generating wealth for more people. And one of the ways to do that is to just be a little bit more open, explain to people how a hedge fund's different, some of the things we've spoken about, how we can hedge. There's other tools as well, like special situations, interesting opportunities, I think we're very good in. There's various things we do different from long onlys. And no one else is going to train people as let's say, one of the longest running funds. That is partly our job. So we've certainly made a decision to be somewhat more open and kind of communicate more actively, write letters once or twice a year to tell clients about what we did in the last 6 months. And I think that's probably made a real difference on the education side. So I think the people that have chosen to invest with us generally have done some research, have read our letters and understand somewhat what makes us different from a typical long-only manager.
All right. Makes sense on that front. And at least it's great to see and hear that, you know, retail investors are, you know, at least willing to invest in the space, because at least from the track record that you know, you guys have been able to garner over the years, you know, there are certainly good returns, you know, to be made. Ending off then, Jacques, the hedge fund sector, market, industry, you know, as a whole, right? What do you make of it right now? I remember there was a time I'm just going to call it the 2000s, and I think even in the early 2010s, where there was the stereotypical finance bro and they all had hedge funds. And, you know, these were the guys that were, you know, seen as being masters of the universe, the Ray Dalios of this world. Sentiment towards hedge fund and hedge fund investing, you know, where are we sitting right now if we were to ask for a pulse check?
I think we are, in my opinion, at quite a good space in South Africa. And I think a key part here has been the regulatory regime where the FSCA brought hedge funds into the collective investment scheme space. This must be six or eight years ago, so I can't remember the exact year, and basically put us under the same net and as unit trust and applied the same regulatory framework. I think that gave people real certainty to say it's basically the same set of rules with slightly more flexibility that's been applied to our other funds. So that gives us certainty. We know what we're going to get. We can invest through the standard platforms where we normally pick our managers. We can pick the hedge funds there. So I think that has led to a good period in SA for hedge funds. And then obviously the key thing that we always know is our business is about returns. Me and my team, we need to have our heads down and make money for clients. That's at the end how people are going to pick it, not based on kind of brand or what you say. It's the results you deliver. So our view is as long as we and other industry participants deliver great returns, people will continue to find the asset class attractive. So that's really the key goal. But I'd say where we are now, I think it's probably a reasonable year for hedge funds in SA.
All right. So that's where we end off, you know, for today. It has been a great discussion, you know, with Jacques. It's getting a take of what's going on in the universe of Peregrine Capital. He gave us a little bit of insight, you know, appear behind the curtains into what they were thinking and, you know, what they were going through in the lead up to the election this year and some of the moves that they were making to sort of make sure that they were taking advantage, you know, of some of the upside that was coming through, you know, from that environment, but also at the same time protecting themselves from any potential downside risk that would have emanated, you know, from that particular election. He gave us the different scenarios that they had anticipated and how, you know, they were working and, you know, balancing their portfolios to actually make sure that they got the best returns in that particular situation. And also just getting some insight then, you know, to say now that we have some certainty around governance in South Africa, you know, how do they expect, you know, markets to develop or evolve, you know, in the coming months and years? years, you know, under this new paradigm called a government of national unity, and how all of that is then affected by, you know, elections in other parts of the world and geopolitics and some of the more global economic factors weighing in on the South African market, as well as, you know, some of the capital allocation decisions, you know, that they have to make. He did, you know, give us some insights to say that they're quite bullish on, you know, SA Inc., SA Equities, but there is some exposure offshore, especially for some of the big themes that we don't necessarily have exposure to in South Africa. And the one that we spoke a little bit about is AI, you know, that's artificial intelligence, and, you know, some of, you know, the tailwinds that are helping that particular sector to do well. And then ending off, just getting some insight into what the performance of Peregrine has looked like across, you know, so their various funds. And he's saying that, you know, at least for now, it has been a relatively good time. They do have a good number of retail investors. There's a lot more education, you know, in that particular sector, helping people to know what's going on. And he is saying that right now, it is a good time to be in the hedge fund industry. So that's been it. We were in conversation with Jacques Conradi. He is the CEO of Peregrine Capital. Jacques, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Mudiwa.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.